case on our docket right now is Polizzi versus City of Brighton. We're ready to hear from the petitioner.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Tim Flanagan. My partner who appears with me is Catherine Eubank. We have the honor of representing the landowners of the Polizzis in this case. My partner wrote the briefs in this case, and I tried the case below. The Polizzis are present. The mother is in the red coat in the second aisle, and the daughter is right next to her. The property that's the subject of this proceeding is a fourth-generation farm on the edge of Brighton, and is very fairly typical condemnation fact pattern. As I indicated, I represented the landowners. This case is a typical scenario that we often see, but under the ruling by the Court of Appeals in this case, the court has adopted a new valuation rule based on a series of California cases in partial taking cases. Of course, your order of certiorari limits the issue to whether the Court of Appeals erred when it held that where dedication is required, evidence valuing the portion that would be dedicated as part of the whole in accordance with the potential future use, whether or not that's admissible. We, of course, say yes, and of course the condemning authorities say no, and that is echoed by CDOT and the Municipal League. Condemners love this rule because they don't have to pay for the highest and best use of the subject property. This overturns at least 100 years of jurisprudence in this state that there aren't many rights that a landowner has in a condemnation proceeding. I mean, let's face it. These statutes were written by the railroads, rewritten by CDOT, with very little input from landowners. But out of two of the basic rights that landowners have, one is to try these cases to juries of landowners, people who could be similarly situated. The second right, the second important right, which is under attack here, is whether or not the landowner is entitled to the highest and best use of the subject property, or is it somehow frozen by a dedication requirement and then have to be valued not only as it currently is zoned and used, but then also subject to these dedication requirements.
Well, can I ask you this? It seemed that there was a large area of agreement in the briefs, although, you know, there is major disagreement as well, that this strip that was condemned to enlarge the road under any circumstances, sometime or another, would be dedicated for roadway purposes. Is that right?
Well, with all due respect, Justice Hobbs, that confuses two very basic concepts. That the assumption that it would be part of a roadway in the future assumes that the current owners wanted to develop this property. If they did want to develop this property, there certainly would be dedication requirements. But they don't intend to develop this property. It's certainly only a cornfield now, but the current owners are happy with that.
But the valuation they wanted was based on the highest and best commercial use as though it had been sold. Isn't that right?
Yes, Your Honor, and that was taken into consideration in the way the appraisers approach the problem. The costs of dedication, the expenses of dedication, the process is figured into a valuation of the whole. You know, in the 35 years that I've been doing this, the rule in a partial take case has always been you value the whole property, and based upon the value of the whole property as its highest and best use, not necessarily the cornfield that it is currently, as its highest and best use, because the property owner is entitled to full value under the Constitution of the taking of his property, that then you derive a unit value and apply that to the take.
But Mr. Flanagan, the difficulty I'm having is it seems to me that your highest and best use is developed, which is the same assumption that you don't want to make when you say the landowners don't want to develop. And so it seems to me you're kind of having your cake and eating it too, and that you are making an assumption on the one hand and then not making the same assumption for the valuation purposes.
I'll admit that the valuation is a hypothetical, but to do it any other way does deprive the landowner of value for the property taken. The impact of this rule, if you are to limit it to its existing use and the taking of a little less than an acre, is to lock in a value some $5,000 or $10,000 on the strip that's taken, rather than the $200,000 that the jury awarded. The irony of this is shown even this is an 80-foot strip of ground that's being taken, 70 of it for a roadway, another 10 for a drainage slope easement. If you apply this new rule that somehow the dedication for the roadway would, you can extract that, you can lock it in at current values, the 70 feet is probably worth less than the 10 feet that isn't subject to a dedication requirement, because it's entitled to be valued at its highest and best use. And, you know, what are those two formulas going to do to a jury? The tried and true process has always been to value the whole rather than to value the take in isolation, which is what they want to do here.
Well, let me just ask you this. The value of the property would be higher once that land, the strip has been, the value of the remainder would be higher once that strip has been used for widening the road. Isn't that right? Because then if in the future any future development comes along, they would take advantage of that. They won't have to do it again.
Well, not necessarily on a unit value, if you look at it as a gross value rather than as a net value, as what they're trying to say.
I don't understand that. Could you?
Well, let me take this issue head on. They're claiming the landowner gets a windfall in this proceeding. And first, and there's a number of answers to that. The landowner does not get a windfall. What they might characterize as a windfall, some of the cases characterize as incidental benefits. But here, there is absolutely no windfall. First, you've got to keep in mind, this is an involuntary proceeding. We didn't choose this road. The city chose it. The city decided to condemn rather than to wait for a dedication. Now, you can't confuse the benefits of voluntarily going in and rezoning and annexing your property where your land becomes more valuable. You can't confuse that with the burdens of condemnation. They're inherently different notions, and that's what they're doing here. The second point is that all of our rules and formulas in condemnation is to hypothecate an arm's length transaction to figure out what the land is worth. Here we don't have to do this. Here, and I'll trouble you just for a few minutes with the facts of this case, but the 120 acres, the mother parcel, is right on the edge of Brighton. 15 acres were taken, or not taken, 15 acres were bought by a developer to put a shopping center in there in 1999, $3.92 a square foot. 16 acres. And it was bought, as most of these are, on a contract that's contingent upon annexation and rezoning. We'll pay you X if we can get all of our land use entitlements. If we can't, you keep the down payment and we move along. That's the way most of these transactions are structured, so that there's very little risk upon the developer. That was the evidence in this case. The importance of that is there was a second transaction, and all the citations for what I'm telling you here are on page 15 of our reply brief or page 12 of the opening brief. But what happened was there, after they go through the annexation, zoning, and platting process, City of Brighton wanted another acre of land dedicated. They needed an XL D-cell lane. They needed this additional room on Bromley Lane. So the developer had to come back to grandma's estate and buy another acre of ground. There's a fair market transaction as to what that's worth. It's not nothing, as they assert. They paid $4 a square foot for a second acre to meet dedication requirements. And what I asked their appraiser on cross-examination is, if you time adjust that $4 like every one of your other comps, what's that worth as of the day to take? It's $5.50. You can multiply the square footage in this case by 550, and that's exactly what the jury did. They based their verdict upon what was a fair market transaction for an acre of ground, for dedication requirements by the city of Brighton, for a piece of ground out of the same parcel of property. This is as close factually as I think we can ever come to what is the ground worth. They don't buy this stuff net value. If you were doing a cash flow analysis, you might look at, we can build three buildings and here's the rent and those sorts of things. When properties of this size are being assembled, it is assembled on a gross value. And just because the cash register might sit on part of it and a parking lot on part of it, one piece of ground isn't more valuable than the other if it has the same integrated use. And that's the point here. And the third and very most important point, and we can't lose sight of this, I asked the Director of Zoning, Marv Falkenberg, in cross-examination, if you have to pay X, whatever, for this ground in this case, isn't it true you can extract that from a developer as a fee in lieu? And he said, yes. The government is at no disadvantage. Whether they pay $2 or $200,000, they can recoup this money from the developer who does come in to rezone that property, Justice Malarkey. So I don't see that as a windfall.
Is that in any of the cases, Mr. Flanagan, or is that just...
It's in this record. Right. It is not in a case, but they admit in their briefs that these dedication requirements are two things. Either you dedicate land or you dedicate money in lieu of. You know, that's what they do for parks sometimes, right, or schools sometimes. If you already have a school, it's called a traffic impact fee. They're pretty aggressive about what they call these things. But when a developer comes in, he either gives up land or money. It's not much different than land or water in the cases that you worked on. Cities will extract what they need to keep themselves whole. So that's the facts before you in this case.
Well, run through that one more time to make sure I understand what you're saying there.
All right. How did the Palazzi Farm, directly to the east subject property, 16 acres on the corner of Sable and Bromley Lane, uh-huh, were purchased by a developer, and there's a shopping center, King Super Shopping Center, there right now. Mm-hmm. It was purchased at essentially $4 a foot. 16 acres was enough to build a shopping center. Once they got into the land use process, permitting and entitlements, it became clear they were short ground. The city wanted acceleration, deceleration lanes. The city wanted to redo signal at that location, and they needed land for widening Bromley Lane. So the developer had to come up with another acre of ground. The acre of ground was to satisfy the city of Brighton's dedication requirements, the same ones they seek to impose upon us, and the same ones that they say makes our land have no value. There was an open market purchase of a set of another acre from Grandma's estate at $4 a foot, this $3 million shopping center. Mm-hmm. And it's $4 a foot, time adjusted, with the jury award. And that, I submit, is not a windfall. That, I submit, is an arm's length fair market transaction. And that is what we try and do with all of these rules out of the cases. The Constitution says we're entitled to just compensation. The statutes, 38.1.114, give us a formula. And there is no reason to follow the law of California to change that formula for a specific type of case, that is land into a dedication requirement.
Mr. Flanagan, sorry, I just wanted to interrupt you before you went into the law, because here's,
I'm not good at the law. I don't spend a lot of time on that.
All right, thank you, sir. Here's the language in the Court of Appeals decision that's confusing me, and maybe you can help me. It basically, they say, that the strip that you're talking about would be of little or no value to the buyer. The buyer would pay the same amount for the entire parcel with or without the strip. And you just think that's wrong?
That is absolutely wrong. That is what Mr. Wilson tells you. That's what CDOT tells you.
And I guess that's what the chief and I are struggling with, and I'm still having a little trouble.
I'm sorry that I'm not being real.
No, I think we're having trouble seeing it. If you could maybe just sort of draw it for us.
What I'm trying to say, and that's why I thought it was important to talk just a little bit about the facts in the shopping center.
Thank you.
In the shopping center scenario, we have two transactions. One to buy the 16 acres for the shopping center, and a subsequent purchase of 1 acre to satisfy the dedication requirements, which were the roadway, et cetera, and we just slid the 16 acres over, bought another acre. It's an arm's length, fair market transaction. It's at $4 a foot. It ain't at nothing.
So what's the strip?
The strip is the north boundary of these properties is Bromley Lane. Bromley Lane was a two-lane highway. They wanted to make it a four-lane highway and put a median in. So to do that, you had to take 70 additional feet to build the roadway, 10 feet for a slope easement, along the northern perimeter of both the shopping center and my client's property. It's a farm that wraps around Grandma's old house because it was all the same farm at one point. So what I'm saying is we have a transaction, a comparable transaction, carved out of the same property that faced the same circumstances, that faced the same dedication requirements, and we have an arm's length transaction to tell us what it's worth, and it ain't zero. It's $4 a foot. It's the same value. It was $392 for the first sale, $4 for the second. It's the same value for the same property, and the jury was impressed by it because they simply used that same unit value, time adjusted, to render the verdict that is before you today, that was overturned by the Court of Appeals. And that's what we're asking you to reinstate, is the jury verdict.
Now, your expert obviously used that comparable and
yes,
others, and I thought that maybe legally, switching over to that, the argument was, well, you can't hypothesize that much in the future because we can't predict that there will, in fact, be such a thing as a dedication here. And
no,
you're...
No, we accept it.
All right.
The trial, and we accept for purposes of this argument, that if and when someone wants to dedicate, the city of Brighton will want land for the roadway. Now they've built the roadway.
Okay.
It exists. But when the developer comes in the future for the Palazzi property that's the subject of this tape, they will simply charge him a traffic impact fee, which equals what they paid in the condemnation case. That's what the head of zoning testified to on cross-examination. So we don't have this terrible robbing of the public purse. They write the rules, they control dedication, they control zoning, and by God, they control the way that these things are applied to developers. And don't worry, they'll come out fine.
You mean they can recoup the benefit of having, in effect, planned in advance for the eventual sale and annexation and development?
Mr. Falkenberg so testified in the case below on
So from your standpoint, it's purely a jury question.
Exactly. Now, they're a little suspicious of juries, and I'm trying to indicate that this is one of the few rights that we as landowners have. We have a right to the highest and best use, and we have a right to try this to juries. And this is merely one piece of evidence. Just like if you had a piece of property and we're trying to value open land or undeveloped land and you have a house on it, well, you got to figure in $100,000 to tear the house down. It's merely an adjustment that the appraisers make to come to their base data. All of the appraisers agreed with that.
Sorry, slipping back into the law, what do you think is the biggest problem with the California approach? I think you're going to say it's because it doesn't take into effect highest and best use.
Yes.
And they would say, well, yes, in fact, it does. It's just an economic kind of reality perspective on highest.
No. They have to say we don't get the highest and best use.
Okay, could you talk about that?
We lock it in at the existing use. It's now a cornfield. You have to value it as a cornfield, and not just a cornfield, but a cornfield that's subject to public dedication if you ever did something to it. And that takes away the partial take from the valuation of the land as a whole. That overturns 100 years worth of jurisprudence, at least back to the 1939 Moffett Tunnel case. In partial take cases, the basic assumption has always been that you figure out the value of the take based upon the integrated use of the entire parcel. And that's what they don't want to do.
And there's no question here that the highest and best use, I guess ultimately will be to facilitate this development in that particular area. But at this point, that hasn't happened because we're still missing some pieces, if you will, the dedication, the development itself.
Right. If you've ever driven out to that courthouse, you've passed the Palazzi Produce Market.
Sure. They're
very happy raising corn and produce.
So the legal trigger from your standpoint is some kind of a contract or application for annexation or something like that.
And in fact, it is, I think, under the statutes, the legal trigger for valuation is the date of possession. And we don't, and so while we're entitled to the highest and best use, we don't speculate as to what is going to happen in the future with this property.
May I ask one question? I'd like to come back to something Justice Martinez asked initially. And it seems to me I've lost sight of this. Maybe I had it wrong now as you've gone through this evaluation process. But didn't you say or concede that the highest and best use you're asking for is one that would necessarily cause the Felizes to lose this land, to forfeit it, so they could never have this land at that value?
The highest and best use under the testimony of all the appraisers and under the landowner was to develop it to either a commercial or a multi-family residential use. So That's right. It couldn't be a cornfield anymore. It would have to change. And in that scenario, they could extract a certain amount of ground for a roadway, if they needed a roadway at that time. The roadway now will have been built. So they could extract the money from the...
Well, are you suggesting that the dedication then is contingent in some way? I thought you were agreeing that it would have to be lost to your
clients. The testimony of the appraisers were, in valuing the whole, they took into account the fact that you would lose some ground to the city under their dedication requirements, as the city claimed. Because as of the date of value, the road hadn't been built. They wanted to expand the roadway. Anybody who walked in was going to have to give them 70, 80 feet of ground along Bromley Lane.
And so, just one last follow-up.
And
so, in the very process,
zero.
In the very process of valuing it in that way,
yes,
that amount, they would necessarily lose the very strip you're talking about, and therefore it could never have that value to them. Is that right?
Well, that's if you look at that strip of ground in isolation as opposed to part of a whole. And the law has always recognized that you value it as part of the whole, not just in isolation. That its value derives from the entire parcel, not just from what someone wants to take. And I'm saying that's the way the market works, too, because that's why I went through the real estate transaction.
Okay.
I reserve the rest. Thank you.
Good morning. Patrick Wilson on behalf of the City of Brighton. Thank you for your time today. I want to start off by just kind of recognizing that the Court of Appeals opinion properly analyzes the unique valuation issue that presents itself in this case. And that unique situation is where property, before it can be developed to a highest and best use, whether it's commercial or mixed use or whatever, would have to dedicate the very same land that's being condemned. In that situation, I believe the Court of Appeals properly looked to the California line of cases and imposed an evidentiary rule that said if that dedication is an absolute and undisputed condition before you can ever achieve that commercial highest and best use, whatever change in use you want to imagine, then you cannot value the property based upon that highest and best use.
Counsel, before you move on, I'm wondering if you could just directly answer what Mr. Flanagan is saying, which is basically, I understand there's going to be a dedication, but I think his argument is whoever develops the property should take the hit rather than the person who's not developing the property. So, I mean, essentially that the landowner should receive the full value, and then the next person, the developer, they're going to develop, they're going to have that dedication, therefore they should take the hit. Can you directly address that?
Yeah, I think I can. First of all, I'd like to know of a developer who's just willing to give away money like that, because that's what he would be doing.
Well, I understand, but I guess the theory is you're going to make them, as a condition of rezoning or whatever, you're going to make them pay that.
Right, exactly. And if of course, you know, the developer is going to pay one aggregate price for the net developable acreage. He knows he can get so many square feet of retail and so many houses and so many whatever. He's going to pay one price on that. And that developer is going to pay the same price, whether it's 54 acres and has yet to satisfy that dedication requirement, or it's only 53 acres and the dedication requirement has already been satisfied. I mean, all he's concerned about is what he can use. The developer, the marketplace, doesn't place any independent value on something that has to simply be given away for free later. In this instance, this condemnation action serves as a substitute for the dedication requirement. At the end of this case, Polizzi property has satisfied this particular dedication requirement.
Mr. Wilson, how do you explain the comparable that the open market transaction?
The 1 acre kind of additional strip of right-of-way?
The $4,
right.
The developer paid.
Right. Well, first of all, I would suggest to you that developer bought that 1 acre under extreme duress. And, right. But let's look back and see what that land was.
I'm sure the developers always buy under extreme duress.
What the situation was is that the property just to the west of the subject parcel is on the corner of Sable and Bromley. And it was a 16-acre corner site, very prime site, and that was the first one to develop. What happened was that Sullivan Hayes came in and entered into a contract contingent upon annexation and rezoning and all that, and then realized that the city of Brighton was going to impose this dedication requirement, whether it's for the road expansion or XL, DCL lanes or whatever. But so, and then the developer had been talking with King Supers and whoever else is on that site, and they maybe needed the full, I think the property was 800 feet by 800 feet. And they realized with their kind of site plan, they needed the full 800 feet. So they had to come back and ask the Polizzis to sell an additional, 1 acre strip along the bottom. But where was that strip? It necessarily was at the back end of the property, because the initial purchase went right up to Bromley and right out to Sable. It was the corner site that the developer purchased. The bottom strip that was purchased at $4 a foot wasn't subject to this dedication encumbrance. It was development land. So that's why that could have been paid for that value. It's only the northernmost 70 feet of this property that is subject to the dedication requirement.
So basically you're saying that his example is not comparable, basically.
I don't think it's comparable. I don't think there's a market for 1 acre strips of property. I'm not sure that's really a valid basis to value the entire property.
But isn't that, in fact, a jury question? I mean, he gets to put on his comparables, you get to put on your comparables, and part of your job cross-examining is to make that exact point in front of the jury.
The one-acre sale was not a comparable sale. It was mentioned in testimony, but it was not one of the comparable sales relied upon by the police.
Well, I guess I thought it was just from talking to Mr. Flanagan now. But in any event, it was evidence at trial.
And your
could have cross-examined and made that, and I suspect you did, and made that same point in front of the jury, and they didn't buy it.
Well, what the jury was faced with in this case, Justice Rice, was I think a dilemma. They could either ignore the dedication requirement, which is what they did, even though it was undisputed evidence, and their verdict is contrary to undisputed evidence, or had they considered the dedication requirement, they would have said, well, Polizzi say the highest and best use is for commercial development, we shouldn't award any compensation. I think those are the two unacceptable circumstances that a jury is faced with when this type of decision is left to a jury. If a dedication requirement is undisputed, and it's undisputed that the property can't develop without that dedication, it's not, and so the effect of the dedication is undisputed, it's not appropriate to...
Well, I'm confused here. What is the trial court error that the Court of Appeals corrected?
The trial court denied a motion in limine by the city, which would have limited the evidence to those uses that do not trigger the dedication requirement. And the reason that was there is because to allow uses that trigger the dedication requirement, again, the jury's faced with either ignoring it, the undisputed dedication requirement, or awarding zero compensation. What this California line of cases and what the Court of Appeals recognize is that, well, wait a minute, we can't value this property based upon its highest and best use, because that leads to dedication. That's having your cake and eating it too. What we have to do is we have to award them some compensation, because in reality, the Polizzis are not seeking that development. So we have to award them some compensation. So when dedication is imposed and the dedication is for the same land that's being condemned, the only fair way to ensure just compensation and to ensure that we're accounting for an undisputed encumbrance regulatory requirement is to limit the valuation evidence to uses that do not trigger the dedication requirement. And the trial court erred by not serving as an appropriate gatekeeper in this case and keeping the evidence out that leads the jury to that conundrum of either ignoring the evidence or awarding zero compensation.
So the evidence that the judge let in was the evidence of this 1 acre sale?
No, the evidence, was generally all of the landowner's comparable sales. All of the landowner's comparable sales were already annexed, already rezoned, had already satisfied their dedication requirements. All that entitlement
wasn't that netted out?
Was that?
Excuse me, wasn't that netted out of the value?
Was it?
Wasn't that the cost of annexation and rezoning netted out?
The only
and dedication.
The only adjustment or accounting that the landowner's appraiser made for that was to subtract out the application fees for submitting a petition in annexation petition and some surveying costs. Those are costs that every developing property has to incur.
But then you cross-examination as Justice Rice pointed out.
Yes,
probably cross-examined about all this other.
We cross-examined, but still. I still think we're left with a situation where we have a jury is faced with either ignoring undisputed evidence and basing their verdict on facts that are contrary to the evidence, or awarding no compensation. This jury verdict cannot stand because it is contrary to the undisputed facts in this case.
As I understand it, the conundrum is essentially that if the highest and best use of the whole property is developed, which requires dedication, and because the strip, which is what we're trying to value here, has to be dedicated, under the highest and best use, the strip is worth nothing because it has to be given to the city. And so to resolve that conundrum, you would say that you can't use that highest and best use as developed, thereby awarding some instead of no value to the strip. That's your argument,
exactly,
right? And it seems to present, two alternatives. Either the strip is valued at the highest and best use, or of the whole property, which you reject, or the strip is not valued at zero, but instead at the, the value of the property with not developed. But I think what Justice Bender is asking, isn't there a third alternative? And that is a proportionate value of that strip. That is, why don't you look at what the whole is worth and as developed property, and then give a proportionate amount for the strip, if it's whatever it is, 10% or something.
I think that's exactly
what's wrong with that scenario.
Well, because then it ignores the dedication requirement. That is, we're talking about, suppose the 54 acres is worth $5 million.
Well, if a developer purchased this property, you're saying there's one price, they pay the same price without regard to to losing the strip, because they know they have to, so they're looking at the remainder.
Right.
And I heard you say that, but the strip isn't given to them, and so they are paying, the developer would pay for the whole property and then give away a portion of their property. So the developer would have to buy the whole property or the portion, the amount of property they wanted to develop plus a strip.
Right. And again, we can always take a purchase price and we can spread it out and divide it by however many square feet you want and reach whatever conclusion you want. But I think that the reality is, which was recognized by the Court of Appeals, is that this strip of land has a different, if we're under the commercial development analysis, this 70 feet of northern strip of land has a different highest and best use. It has to be used for roadway dedication. And I don't think, of course the developer is going to pay an aggregate price for the whole thing, but he'll pay that same price for a 1 acre smaller parcel now that he knows he's got his dedication requirement satisfied. So I don't think, you're right, these properties are bought on a gross basis.
Things can happen between here and there, though. That's the problem. Well, you're talking about people who have an agricultural use that, for all intents and purposes, they intend to continue.
Mm-hmm.
There are eventualities that may happen that may never be annexed, a depressed economy, open space purchase. What's wrong with Mr. Flanagan's statement that if it were developed, that the developer would pay some kind of exaction fee, which would offset the government's investment in pre-planning the roadway?
Well, you know, the argument about Mr. Falkenberg and his testimony about recouping the costs of this litigation or whatnot is a little bit misstated. Mr. Falkenberg stated that annexation is a contractual process. There's no absolute right to be annexed. And cities can condition annexation on whatever they want. But it's a two-way street. The city can't just say, well, boy, Mr. Developer, we want you to pay this, 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 this. Developer goes somewhere else. The developer leaves. I don't think we can just pass on all these costs to the developer and expect the developer either to not develop the property and not buy it from the Polizzis, or if he's aware of all these impending costs, to lower the price that he would pay to the Polizzis. These people are aware of these things. So, yes.
Wilson, I just want to restate your argument, make sure I understand it. You are saying that if this strip of land, which has to be dedicated and is worth nothing, but city's willing to pay cornfield value for it, if this strip of land is overvalued at developed value, then that just could be enough to prevent the development of the whole property as making it too expensive.
Well, no, I think what Mr. Flanagan was suggesting is that the city can just pass on the costs of overpaying, you know, paying more than just compensation for this property, for this litigation, for all the costs that were associated in this condemnation, and pass that on to some future developer. I don't think developers just say, okay, yeah, I'll take that hit.
But you're saying, yes, we can, except we might lose a buyer if it's too expensive.
Well, I think we have the legal authority. It doesn't mean it's going to happen, though. I mean, it's a two-way street. It's a negotiated annexation agreement. And if the city insists upon too much, they're not going to get the property's not going to annex. You know, the developer will go somewhere else, and the Polizzis won't have a sale of their property.
Well, in this situation, as I understand, there's an intergovernmental agreement between Brighton and the county, Adams County, because this is not Brighton property, or wasn't at the time this case was going on. And how does that impact all of this?
Well, I think what the IGA with the county suggests is that was a necessary component for this, for the Court of Appeals ruling to have a basis. If the landowners were able to change use and develop under the county's land use jurisdiction, well, there would be no dedication requirement. The dedication requirement was specific to Brighton. But that IGA between Brighton and Adams County said that this property, this general area, and it wasn't just the Polizzi property, but this area along Bromley is in the city's planning influence area. Mm-hmm. Adams County agreed, hey, we're gonna run everything through you on this. We won't do any development applications in this particular area. And so it's kind of a predicate, a necessary predicate for this rule to really apply appropriately in this case. If the landowners could have developed in the county, I wouldn't have filed my motion in limine. We wouldn't be here arguing this issue. So what that IGA is what shows that this dedication is a reality. It's an encumbrance or a restriction on the use of the property that has to be accounted for one way or another, or we can't use that highest and best use. This is very similar to the decision this court issued in the Fowler case, Fowler versus City of Boulder, that there the property owner had some land in a floodplain area, but valued it based upon commercial development. And this and the trial court allowed that, and the City of Boulder appealed because the evidence was speculative. Here was this restriction.
But that needed a rezoning to sort of take out the floodplain encumbrance or reality, physical reality, whatever you will. I don't see that that's comparable argument. So go back again and look at Fowler, would you? I mean, explain your argument.
Well, okay. In Fowler, the way I understand it, I mean, it was an inverse case and it was a temporary taking case, but I don't think those are pertinent distinctions. The landowner valued the case based upon a commercial use, just like the Polizzi's here did. However, that valuation ignored the fact that there were significant development restrictions because of the floodplain. And so they got an award of a lot of money for the temporary taking, and the city appealed. And this court said, wait a minute, you didn't account for the dedication requirement. You didn't account for this encumbrance or this restriction on the property's use. And I'm not saying that Fowler directed the parties to apply this type of rule, because it wasn't a dedication case. But this court has recognized cases where it's inappropriate just to ignore a significant restriction on the highest and best use of the property.
Fowler,
the language was speculative, or the evidence was speculative.
Well, I don't think Fowler was an evidentiary admissibility of evidence case.
It was an objection to
yes.
the valuation approach
right.
pursued by the landowner.
It was a legal issue. So that's a little different, isn't it? I mean, here.
No, I mean, I think.
Why is this inadmissible as a matter of law rather than having a jury decide to just net out, or as Justice Martinez says, consider the proportionate value of the strip?
Well, the language in Fowler, I believe, is addresses that. And this court says, the jury was required to consider that dedication requirement. The floodplain restrictions in Fowler. And because they awarded a valuation that didn't account for it, the court overturned the verdict or whatever it was. This is an instance in the Polizzi case where the dedication requirement has to be accounted for. It is undisputed, and it is not something that I think we can just pass off to the jury. It's like as a matter of law or a Rule 56 type determination that as a matter of law, this land, this northern 70 feet, will be dedicated. There's no room for juries to decide whether they want to apply that or not. That's the type of situation where that type of decision should be taken away from a jury. Because when we left it to a jury, what happens is that they enter a verdict that is contrary to the evidence, or the other option, had I won the case, is they would have awarded zero, and we would have acknowledged. That verdict can't stand either. Compensation is going to be paid. The only way to avoid that dilemma, to avoid the untenable jury verdict, is, and I'm asking you to enter a rule that's very narrow. This only applies in dedication, a very unique type situation. And it's where the dedication is the same land as that being condemned. But I think that it has to be limited.
You know, I'm still trying to wrap my head around the fact that it seems to me you're asserting unincorporated part of the county cornfields as the value for this property, and you don't want any comparable evidence of highest and best use and annexed property. What under your theory, what are the comparables? What, as a matter of law, what comparables need to be?
The comparables that are appropriate are those that have uses that do not trigger the dedication requirement. So they're uses that are in the county, or if the appraiser, like the city's appraiser, had to rely upon some sales because they were so close that are already in the city, you have to account for the dedication. And the city's appraiser made an adjustment for annexation and rezoning status. The comparable sales had achieved that status, and he took them down, some type of adjustment. So the type of evidence that is appropriate in this case are comparable sales or other evidence of value that doesn't based upon uses that doesn't trigger the dedication requirement. This property cannot be valued as commercial land. The right-of-way land, this northern 70 feet, will never be used for commercial land. What this California line of cases and what the Court of Appeals decision does is it awards the landowners compensation based upon its existing uses. Because anything more than that, and the land is going to have to be dedicated to the city. And realize, again, I think it's important, and we're trying to put the landowner in as good a position pecuniarily as if no taking had occurred. This rule does that. That the end result is that their leftover property, their remainder property, is all net development ground, and it has already satisfied this obligation. If it continues, as Mr. Flanagan suggests, if this property is going to be continued to be used as agricultural and as the vegetable stand, well, then they've been paid exactly what this is. What the landowners can't do is value the property upon a future use and only take the good attributes of that future use and not account for the negative consequences, costs of achieving that use. I'd like to touch real briefly on the Robinson case, which is the Nevada case relied upon by the landowners. In the Robinson case, very similar factual pattern to this case. But I think the Nevada Supreme Court had a couple of missteps in its analysis. The Nevada Supreme Court objected to the, and really what happened in that case, the city of North Las Vegas asked for a similar evidentiary restriction. I think it was in the form of a jury instruction that said you can only value the property based upon uses that don't trigger the dedication requirement. And I think that the Supreme Court looked at that and said, well, wait a minute, you're ignoring the highest and best use, and you're also severing the part taken apart from the rest of the property. And I believe both of those are inaccurate. In terms of ignoring the highest and best use, and I don't mean to repeat my argument here, but what the California rule, what the analysis that we propose in this case is that we don't ignore the highest and best use. We saw highest and best use in the future is probably going to be annexation, rezoning, and development. But we take a broader, more complete, realistic picture and account for that dedication requirement, which is, again, undisputed, not controverted as to its application and effect to this case. In terms of the consortium, so I think the Robinson case just kind of misunderstood that particular aspect of it. The Supreme Court in Nevada also objected to it as severing the part taken and not valuing it as part of the whole. And I think that's mistaken as well, because under the Court of Appeals ruling in this case, we aren't valuing it separately. We're saying you can't value it on uses that trigger the dedication requirement. Not one square foot of that entire 54-acre parcel can get developed unless the dedication is made. So under our approach, we're valuing it as part of the whole. Now, when you go under the commercial development analysis, are we valuing it differently? Well, yeah, of course we are, because the northern 70 feet is different than the rest of the property. The northern 70 feet is encumbered by the dedication requirement. And the general rule that Mr. Flanagan cites to, that the part taken must be valued as part of the whole, that applies only when the parcel is sufficiently uniform. Now, this land is physically uniform. It's all in the county. It's all zoned agricultural. However, under this commercial analysis that the landowners propose, the northern 70 feet is different than the rest of the property. It's just like an encumbrance that kicks in when you try to develop the property. It could be a private encumbrance. This is one that's a regulatory encumbrance. The point is that it is undisputable that that's going to apply and limit the uses of this property. If there are no further questions, I thank you for your time.
Let me try and deal with the questions. Justice Ide, the question about who's going to bear the cost of the difference in land value between an agricultural value and a commercial value? Is that somehow a windfall to the Palazzis, or is that something the developer bears? And obviously, it's a cost the developer bears. That's what happens under these contracts. The Palazzi wins, the developer loses. If the developer pays too much, maybe we have the scenario here that they'll go away. But under the evidence of this case, they buy ground at $4, they rezone it, and it's worth $8 or $12. That differential is what the developer, that's how they make money. This poor grandmother, who's a farm for years, didn't take advantage of Sullivan Hayes. There wasn't a sale under duress to these people at $4 a square foot. They wouldn't have bought it if it hadn't been in their economic interest. These people don't make money losing money. The 16-acre sale of the shopping center was the comparable sale. The facts involving the second sale or second purchase of an acre was additional evidence before the fact finder, which we used to explain what the city was talking about, which leads into my second point of view. Mr. Wilson got up here and said he's talking about an evidentiary rule. If it's an evidentiary rule, we both get our shots at it in front of the jury, and that's what's happened below. They're not arguing for a rule of evidence. They're arguing for a rule of exclusion. They don't want this before the jury. Now, one of the basic problems with that is that they had no testimony to support an agricultural value. The appraisers both said the highest and best use was this commercial property. Then they used different comps and came up with different values. But unlike the California cases, the city didn't put on an appraiser that said, this is locked in by dedication to an ag value and ag ground is worth X. They didn't do that.
Mr. Granigan, can I ask you a question about the evidence and your view about the admissibility of the evidence? You're not suggesting, are you, that evidence should come in, would not be inadmissible, even if it was evidence of a use that's impossible?
No. Under the rationale, the appraisers have a very specific, it's set forth by the Appraisal Institute, a very specific four-part test they've got to go through in coming to a highest and best use, physically possible, economic.
Okay.
And one of those is things that can actually be done with the property.
Well, let me ask you this then. If the law were such, whether it's the county or the city, whatever, that controlled, that this land could not be used for commercial purposes, you're not suggesting, are you, then, that it would have been permissible for you to present evidence of what this land would have been worth for commercial purposes?
Not unless it could be tied to evidence that we could get it rezoned and we could get that, we could change
right.
that. And under the Webb case, we'd have to have someone testify to a reasonable probability that we could change the zoning, therefore, to put the other evidence. And if we couldn't make the linkage, we couldn't get it in.
And yet it seems that you are agreeing that this particular strip of land that's at issue could never be used for commercial purposes. And yet you're calling it the highest and best use for this strip to value it as a commercial for commercial purposes.
And that's because I look at the piece of ground in gross, not in isolation, as to the 70 feet. And both sides appraisers did that. Because to develop it as commercial property, you're going to have to deal with dedication requirements. It's not any different than in Fowler. You got to deal with floodplain. You can't build fence line to fence line when you got floodplain. It's not different than tearing a building down to get a raw land value. These are adjustments that are inherent in the system that we have to deal with. The appraisers testified that they dealt with those, both sides. And both sides used the same methodology. Both sides used comparable sales. Both sides used sales that had to dedicate for development purposes. We didn't have the evidence as in the California cases with someone just saying, this is an ag value, that's all you can get. So there isn't an evidentiary support for the position being argued, is my point. The proportionality that was talked about as the Justice Martinez approach is the law. We do value the whole. absent some extraordinary circumstances like public project rule, we value the whole of the property, and the proportionate amount, whether it's 10%, 5%, is what's assigned to the take. Because on a gross basis, that's the way land is bought and sold. That's the way the marketplace operates. The marketplace does not say we'll pay this much for landscaping, this much for parking lot, this much for a building site, and then aggregate all those values. It's done on a gross basis, and it's considered. That's the way the transactions occur, and that's the way we adopt the unit value. We can look at more than one use, and the Jeffco Associates says in a large enough parcel you can have use, and in this case you probably have one use of commercial on the frontage property, mixed multifamily in the rear. That's exactly the way the land is zoned to the north of this property. The Uncle Tom, it's the same 40 acres out of the same farm. That's what we have here. We don't have to speculate. But we have never gone to the point of, it's one thing to have different uses. It's a whole nother thing to say we take out every function and put a specific value on it. As to the cross-examination of Mr. Falkenberg, look at the record, page 102, line 6 through 103.9. He did say they could recoup this money. It's not my speculation. There isn't any sort of raid on the public purse. I'd ask you to reinstate the jury verdict. Thank you.